like I said, I think I mentioned on the bus, he's like one of the most popular people on YU Torah. Some of you have listened to his shiurim. Some of you have heard him. His shiurim live. He's an incredible mashpia of Torah. And if you go to Stern next year, you get him. What does that mean? Stern is basically putting a tremendous effort into bringing more and more Torah and Torah personalities into your lives so that you can interact with them in the Beis Medrash, not only in their classes, but also they're available for you to schmooze with. Here you have a lot of Rebbeim to schmooze with. When you go back, you need Rebbeim also. So Stern is basically making a massive Talmidei Chachamim available to you. And that is incredible. It's new. It's getting better every single year. I see it getting better every single year. So it's just an incredible opportunity. Without further ado.
So good evening, everybody. And it's a real pleasure to be here. I actually have never been here before. And I thank you. I know you've had a very, very difficult and busy and exhausting couple of days. So I thank you for participating. And I know it's late at night. But what can be better than to end off our day with Limud HaTorah? How lucky you are, Ashreichem, that you have the opportunity to be here for the year and to focus on your own growth. What better place to do that than in Yerushalayim? Ure'e b'tuv Yerushalayim kol yemei chayecha. You should have many, many opportunities to continue to grow together. And I just think it's so special. Like we see so often in Chazal, Ha'adam nimshach achar svivosav. We assume that a person is very profoundly impacted by the environment that they surround themselves in. It's no coincidence that when we're in an environment of growth like this, that we all grow, that we all reach higher, that we all continue to challenge ourselves, because that's what everyone around us is doing as well. And it becomes easier to do so when we have so many people around us doing the same. And it's important. I know it's hard to believe, but there will come a time in your lives when you're not going to be in such a beautiful cocoon like this. Maybe it's going to be after this year. Maybe it's going to be after next year. And maybe it's going to be after whatever post-seminary you choose to go to. But you're going to have to engage with the world. You're going to have to engage with people who are not growth-oriented, who do not have the same ideals as you do, who may not be as focused as you are, who don't want to challenge themselves, and who certainly don't live the same kinds of values that you live and that you try to uphold. And it's important that in these foundational years, you build as strong a foundation as you can to try to encourage yourself that even after you move out from this kind of sviva, from this kind of surrounding, that you have the opportunity to then take it forward and use those foundations in all the interactions that you'll have moving forward. So what I was asked to talk about this evening is our complicated relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I know it sounds strange, but the truth is, it is a very complicated relationship if we're willing to talk honestly and openly. That's really what it is. Throughout life, we have a very dynamic relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam that continues to change, that always evolves, that is always in flux. So in last week's Parsha, we read about Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, as we know, is a fugitive, and he falls asleep. So the Medrash on that Pasuk says, do I need to translate everything here, or? Different seminaries were different. No? We're okay?
We were just there in Beitel.
Wow, lucky you.
It was just on the rock.
Chaval al hazman, amazing. So the Medrash. So, were the words of the Medrash plastered on the rock there? No. Okay. So then I hope it's news to you. So the Medrash says, on that pasuk, a very interesting comment. Matrona achas shala l'Rab Yossi ben Chalafta. There was an aristocratic woman who engages Rab Yossi ben Chalafta in conversation. Anybody know Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta was a Tana, an Amora, a Rishon, an Achron recently? I ask my students in Stern all the time when I quote something from the Tzitz Eliezer or from Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. I ask them, he was a Rishon? He was an Achron? When did he live? It's important that we understand the context of Jewish history, that we understand as we engage certainly in a halachic discussion to know who it is that we're talking about, what weight they hold, which generation they lived in, who were the bar pluktas of that generation, who were they arguing with, who were they conversing with, who were they talking to. So Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta was one of the greatest of the Tanoim. He's quoted in a Medrash, so that should be, I guess, the telltale sign that he was a Tana. So Rabbi Yossi ben Chalafta is speaking with this woman, And she says, I have a question. L'kama yamin bara HaKadosh Baruch Hu es olamo? How many days did it take HaKadosh Baruch Hu to create the world? Rabbi Yossi turns back and he says, what kind of question is that? Everybody knows, ki sheshes yamim asa Hashem asa shamayim v'asa aretz. The Ribbono Shel Olam created the world in 6 days. On the seventh day, he rested. Okay, so she turns back to him and says, if we're all in agreement that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in 6 days, it's been a very long time since the end of those 6 days. Me'az va'adata mahu osa. What has HaKadosh Baruch Hu been busy with from that time until now? And the Medrash writes that perhaps the answer is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been bona sulamos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has been building ladders. Malim lazeh u'mashpi lazeh u'meirim lazeh. And there are people going up and down the ladders constantly throughout the journey of life. What does the Medrash mean? I think what the Medrash is intending to tell us is that our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly in flux. We're always in motion. There are times in our lives when we feel the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so close to us. We feel we're on the top of the ladder. There are other junctures of our lives where we feel at a very different location on that ladder. And it's not always the same. Relationships are complicated. All the relationships we have in life are complicated. But certainly the relationship that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is complicated and is very different and extremely dynamic. And throughout life, we have different perspectives and different understandings. I'll give you one very great example. In Parshas Beshalach, the Torah writes that the Jewish people had just come out of Mitzrayim. And as we know, they were overwhelmed by the incredible miracles that they saw, by all the makos, by everything, Yad Chazaka v'Zera HaNetuya. So much so that we say in Az Yashir, Ze Keli Va'Anveyu. What does it mean, Ze Keli Va'Anveyu? Chazal have a tradition that any time it says Ze in the Torah, or most of the times, it means that you can point to it, that it's something that's physically tangible, that you can relate to it. When they came out of Mitzrayim and they experienced Kriyas Yamsuf, they were actually able to feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ze Keli, they pointed to the Ribbono Shel Olam and said, that's him. We understand, it's him. It's so glaringly obvious. They were overwhelmed by the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the very same Parsha, go just a few psukim later, and suddenly everyone is confused and nobody knows what's going on, and there's no food and there's nothing to drink, and what are we going to do? And the same Jewish people in the same Parsha turn around and say, Hayesh Hashem b'kirbenu imayim? How can that be? Hayesh Hashem b'kirbenu imayim? You are the people who just said Zekeli v'anveyu. So the Netziv deals with it on Chumash to try to understand what happened. But what's clear is that there are different experiences that we go through where we have very conflicting feelings and very different understandings. There are moments in life when we feel Zekeli v'anveyu, it's so clear to me, it's so overwhelming a presence in my life. There are other times when we feel Hayesh Hashem b'kirbenu. Where's HaKadosh Baruch Hu in all of this? Where does he fit into the puzzle? How does this situation that's unfolding be in line with my understanding of who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, of Hatovu Meitiv, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu who is Avinu Avarachaman? And we have these kinds of situations. And it's difficult, it's complicated, to come to a real understanding and appreciation of who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in our lives. A number of years ago, I don't know how old everybody is here, I assume 18, 19? So about 8 years ago, you were only 10 years old, so I don't know how much you were involved or following the story. But there was a great tragedy about 8 years ago when there were three young boys, 17 years old, who were captured on their way home from yeshiva. And they were abducted by Palestinian terrorists. They were missing for 18 days, Chai Yamim. And it was an extremely unifying time for the Jewish community all over the world. Very powerful emotions. Everybody was feeling as if it was their own children. In the end of the story was they were actually shot in the first 5 minutes. And everyone who was searching for them for the 18 days was not aware of the fact that they were already dead. On the second yard site, for those boys, I was asked to come to Eretz Yisrael and speak. The families asked me to speak at the Beis HaKvaros. So I came, and it's a very beautiful, symbolic three graves together. I don't know if you've ever been there. Very beautiful. Three of them are all buried next to each other. Their matzevas make up a Magen David that's broken. Very powerful image. So we were there, and hundreds of people were gathered to commemorate the yard site. I warmly embraced the parents. We were talking a little bit. They showed me to my seat, and they said, "You're going to be the first speaker, but we're not going to begin for another 15 minutes. So I'm looking around and wondering, I'm the first speaker. Everybody's here. The place is packed. What are we waiting 15 minutes? What are we going to do for the next 15 minutes? Everyone was quiet, which is very unusual, but everyone was sitting there. What happened next was such a powerful moment. For 15 minutes, these parents stood at the foot of their children's grave, and they sang 15 minutes of songs from Shir HaShirim, describing their unbreakable bond and connection, their feeling of closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. 15 minutes of this. And everyone was crying, and I said to myself, I honestly believe I'm crying for a different reason than most other people here. I venture to say most of the people cried because it brought them back into the emotion of the story, and it brought them back to feel how traumatic it was for everyone, and the raw feelings that everybody has when they consider everything that the community went through in the search of those boys. But I cried for a totally different reason. I cried because I said, it's the first time in my life that I've ever been exposed to a situation where somebody has such a deep connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and I'm so far away from it. And there's no part of it that I can relate to. I have no understanding of what this means. I sat there in awe and I saw how people are just so overwhelming in their understanding of where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with them in their lives. And here I am, light years away, light years behind them. And I have no appreciation for what this experience even means. This summer, I was in Camp Simcha. We go the first 2 weeks of the summer every year. Camp Simcha is an amazing place. I don't know if anyone here has ever been there. Anyone's been there? Yeah? As a?
As a specialty.
Ah, so you're going to be back this year? As a counselor?
Hoping so.
Okay, looking forward. So, anyone else planning to go? You're missing out. It's an amazing place. So I was in Camp Simcha this summer. I gave a talk for the oldest division on Shabbos afternoon. And two 17-year-old girls who are 2.5 years in remission came over to talk to me after the shiur. And they said that they have something extremely personal they've never shared with any of their family members, with their parents. But because they became so close over the 2 weeks of camp, they've opened up to each other, and they've shared a lot of their experiences, and they've talked very openly. And they were surprised to learn that they both had the same tefillah that they offer every day, and they wanted to discuss it. So I said, what's the issue? They said they're both in remission for the last 2.5 years. That means they're both healthy for the last 2.5 years. They said from the day that they got off of treatment and they were deemed to be in remission, they've both been offering the same tefillah every single day. And that tefillah is, they both ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day to make them sick again. So I said, what an inappropriate tefillah. Why would a person ever ask for such a thing? And they said, from the day we got better, we have lost the feeling of closeness and connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we felt when we were going through treatment. And we'll do anything to get it back. We'll get sick again. Because we miss that feeling. So we had a discussion about how horrible a tefillah that is and how inappropriate it is to daven for such a thing. But put that aside for a moment. You have people who are crying for Kivras Elokim. You have people who are crying in their lives because they want to feel close. Tzama nafshi l'Elokim. They want to feel close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There was a high school boy in DRS in my neighborhood who asked Rav Asher Weiss on his recent trip to New York. So he was in my house for Shabbos and a lot of the kids were around. So this boy approached them and he said, Rabbi, what's your favorite pasuk in all of Tanakh? Interesting question. Without flinching, he said, my favorite pasuk in all of Tanakh is Va'ani Kirvas Elokim Litov. I don't think it's the choice I would have made. but it says so much about a person who lives life like that. Va'ani kirvas Elokim li tov. It's what we all try to do. It's what we all look forward to. In the beginning of Shemona Esrei every day, we start off the first bracha by saying Elokeinu, Elokei Avoseinu. Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. So the Mabit, in his famous Sefer on the Siddur, Beis Elokim, he points out that that's a very strange formulation. We know that every word in the Shemona Esrei is so carefully measured. The Nefesh HaChaim writes how Reb Chaim Volozhiner explains. Anybody know who was Reb Chaim Volozhiner a Talmud of? Somebody. Okay. Who was one of the greatest individuals in the last 250 years in Jewish history? He was the Rebbe of Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Many said he was like a Rishon. The Vilna Gaon. The preeminent Talmud of the Vilna Gaon is Reb Chaim Volozhiner. Reb Chaim Volozhiner writes in the Nefesh HaChaim that every word of the Shemona Esrei was written b'nevuah. The Gemara basically says that. The Gemara says, Mehem kama nevi'im. Reb Chaim Volozhiner asks, why did they need nevi'im to author the Shemona Esrei? Anybody could author the Shemona Esrei. And he says there's so much deep, rich meaning behind every word. A regular, average Talmud Chacham, a regular Jewish leader, a great person, could never have written such a thing on their own without a sense of nevuah. To have the prophetic vision that's behind all the words of Shemona Esrei. So you look in the words of Shemona Esrei and you wonder, why does it say this repetition? Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu, you're the God of our Father. Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, it's the same thing. So why the repetition? And I believe the Mabit suggests, imagine Avraham Avinu. What kind of home he was raising Yitzchak in. The Rambam writes, when he describes the life of Avraham Avinu, he says, Hanefesh asher asu b'charan. What does it mean when it says in Chumash, Avraham Avinu had some people who came along with him. He made some bali tshuva. He made people believe in God. The Rambam says it was alafim uravavos. It was tens of thousands of people that came along with Avram and Sarah. They ran the most successful Kiruv mission ever in the history of the world. And look what was going on in open tent and the chesed and the values that he gave over and the closeness and the nevuah. Can you imagine Yitzchak Avinu grows up in such a home, taking in all the incredible values that his father and mother are giving him? Rabbi Yashiv writes in one of his svarim so beautifully. The Torah says, Avraham Avinu is beloved by HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he has a commitment to invest in the chinuch of his child Yitzchak. Ki yedatev leman asher yitzav es bano es beis avacharav. Writes Rabbi Yashiv. So then, let's learn from the master machanech, Avraham Avinu. Let's read through all the conversations that he has with Yitzchak to try to understand how should we raise our children? How should we speak to our children? How should we interact and communicate with them? You look in Chumash and you see there's only 8 words of communication between Avraham Avinu and his son Yitzchak. When is that? When they went to the Akedah. Yitzchak Avinu is confused. He doesn't know what's going on. He turns to his father. His father answers him. 8 words. That's it. Says Rabbi Yashiv, because the chinuch that Avraham Avinu gave to Yitzchak had nothing to do with the words that he said. It was the modeling of behavior that he showed him of how one is to live life. That was the powerful chinuch of Avraham Avinu. Nothing had to be said. Of course he spoke to his son, but that's irrelevant. That was not where the chinuch came from. The chinuch came from Yitzchak Avinu watching his father, the kind of life that he built, the kind of legacy that he left behind. So imagine, you're Yitzchak Avinu growing up in the home of Avraham Avinu. You're set. What do you need to do? What left is there for you to do? Yitzchak said, I'm not going to live life being the child of Avraham Avinu. I know that my father worked hard to develop a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but I'm going to work hard to make it Elokei Yitzchak. It does not suffice with Elokei Avram. I need to have a personal connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam that's meaningful to me. And Yaakov said the same. Yaakov said the same thing. My father is the God of Ador. My grandfather was the God of Ador. It makes no difference. Yaakov said, I have to work in my life to make it Elokei Yaakov. This is the God of Yaakov Avinu, not just because I'm a son of Yitzchak, not just because I'm the son of Avram. And I think about this all the time. I don't know what kind of home everybody grew up in. I don't know what kind of day school or yeshiva you went to. But now you're all in seminary. And you have great teachers. And you have great mashpiyim. And you have great educators. And great friends. But one always has to make sure that they pull themselves away at some point and say, although it's Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu, and we have a beautiful Mesorah, and we learn so much beautiful Torah, I have to try in my life to figure out how to make it a situation of Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, ve'Elokei Yaakov, ve'Elokei me. What does the Ribono Shel Olam mean to me? My father always told us as children, and he's so humble, so he never told us the exact allusion of what he meant, but it was clear what he was saying. My father was a Gadol B'Yisrael. He always told us as children, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Afal pi shehinichu lo aviv sefer Torah mitzvah sheyichtov mishelo. The Gemara is talking there about a din of a melech. When a melech takes the mantle of leadership, he has to write a sefer Torah. It's one of the first obligations that he's given. What happens if his father was a melech? And his father now passed away. And he left the sefer Torah in the palace. So why do I have to commission a new sefer Torah? Says the Gemara, no. Afal pi shehinichu lo aviv sefer Torah mitzvah sheyichtov mishelo. Even though his father left him over Yerusha, an inheritance of the Sefer Torah, he has to try to make his own. It's his own obligation. And my father told us this is not only a chiyuv on a melech, it's on every person. Afal pi shehinichu lo aviv Sefer Torah, even if our parents give us a rich Mesorah, even if our parents give us their relationship that they develop with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mitzvah lo sheyichtov mishalo. It's our job throughout our lives to write and to fashion and whittle out our own Sefer Torah and to make the religion meaningful to us with our predispositions, with our interests, with our understandings, with our connection. And sometimes it's hard growing up in a home where you were not forced to do that because everything was a given. To look back and to challenge ourselves a little bit and ask ourselves the difficult question, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu mean to me? Forgetting what he means to my parents and my grandparents and everyone who came before, what does the Ribono Shel Olam actually mean to me? When we talk about Amunah, I once saw a comment of Rav Shimshon Pinkus, I think it's in his Sefer on Amunah, I don't remember exactly where, but he has a fascinating comment where he says, what exactly does Amunah mean? So he gives the following mashal. Imagine you have a person living in a community, can't make a parnasa, just can't hold down a job. He's not pulling it together. He's unable to support his family. He doesn't know what to do. He finally decides, you know, I need to start my own business venture. Maybe I'll be successful. Problem is, you need money to be able to start your own business. He doesn't have any money. So he goes to his long trusted friend, 25 years, they've been friendly with each other. He goes to this person and he says, you know, I need to start my own business. I have to support my family. I don't know what to do. Would you be willing to lend me $250,000? I'll pay it back over the span of 10 years. I just need to get the business off the ground. His friend thinks about it, comes back to him the next day. He says, you know what? We've been friends for a long time. I really feel sorry for you. Baruch Hashem, I'm doing very well. I have money in the bank. I'll take out of my savings. I'll give you. Start your business. I hope you get off the ground. I hope it's successful. They sign a contract. The payment plan, he's on his way. The next day, somebody comes over to this lender, to this investor, and he says, I heard that you lent money to your friend, $250,000 to start a business. He says, yes. So I'm just curious, how do you know you're going to get paid back? Well, I don't really know. I trust him. He told me he's going to pay me back. We signed the contract. Well, what happens if he doesn't pay back? Well, the friend says, I don't know what happens if he goes bankrupt and he doesn't have any money, so I lose the money. So why did you give it to him? The answer is because I believe him. I trust him. We have 25 years of friendship that back up my claim of why I should believe him. I think he's an honest person because of everything I know, because of the relationship we've developed. In the end of the day, you're jumping in and you're saying, I believe, and that's the only reason why I do what I do. Says of Shimshon Pinkus, imagine if I would say to you, I believe that it's nighttime right now. Would that be the right way to say it? No. What would be the right way to express myself? I know that it's nighttime. It's not that I believe, it's clear, it's fact. Nobody can deny it. If I say I believe that this table is made out of wood, that would be a strange way to express myself. I know that this table is wood. So what does it mean when we talk about emunah? Emunah means to believe. A person who's a believer is of the understanding that at some point in life, you're going to get to a question, you're not going to have an answer for it, you're going to get to a situation where you're really going to be challenged. Someone's going to pin you against the wall and say, how do you believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? How do you answer this question? How do you explain this situation? You believe Avinu Avarachaman when you have sick children? When you have people suffering? When you have terrorist attacks going on in Yerushalayim? You believe? At some point in every person's life, you're going to be confronted with questions. It happens to all of us. We're on a sulam. We're on a journey. It's the reality of life. Says of Shimshon Pinkus, it's nothing to get nervous about. That's what emunah means. At some point, you have to take the leap of faith and say, I believe. I don't know with certainty. I don't know what to say. But because I have such a long-standing relationship of 3,000 years with my Father in heaven, that's why I believe. Because we have enough of a history together to prove that there is a God in the world. And in the end of the day, that's what emunah actually means. And the reason why this is so complicated is because the Navi Yeshaya writes, in the description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says that God is referred to as a kel mistater. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is referred to as a God who is hidden. Ask the Baal HaTanya, why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose to hide himself? It's much easier to relate to entities that we can physically, tangibly have a relationship with. So why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose to do that? Explains the Baal HaTanya so beautifully. I'm curious, how many of you here miss your parents? You don't have to say yes, it's okay. So here's my question, a little more personal. When you lived at home last year, did you ever miss your parents? No. Is that because you don't love them? No. So what changed from last year to this year? The difference is that there's a distance that's been created between your parents and you. You're not seeing them every day. You're not living in their home. They're not providing for you as much as they do on a daily basis when you're in their house. You don't have that interaction that you're used to. And that distance creates a sense of longing, a sense of yearning, a pining for that relationship to be back again. It's only then that we appreciate what the relationship actually means to us. When you think about Taras HaMishpacha, so you think about it on face value and you say, how evil can God be that he says I have to stay away from my spouse for this amount of time? You think about it a little more deeply and you realize this is part of what makes relationships so special. That we have an opportunity to have a little bit of a distance, which makes us feel a desire, a want, an excitement to be in the relationship again, to recommit ourselves, to rededicate once again. It's the beauty of Taras HaMishpacha. It's what the relationship is all about. Says the Baal HaTanya, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu set this up in the way of being a kel mistater, of so much mystery, of we don't know where he is, and we don't know where to find him, and we can't figure out where to place ourselves in the context of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself? The answer is, because by design, he wanted it to be this way, that we should be on an incessant journey throughout life to try to discover, to try to uncover, to try to figure out, where is HaKadosh Baruch Hu and how do I get to him? And how do I come to that relationship and that understanding? And that keeps the journey of life and the quest very exciting. Sometimes daunting, sometimes difficult, but something that we are on a ultimate journey to always try to uncover and discover as well. The Gemara says in Erevin, how long are we supposed to go? You tell me. It's late already. You have to get some sleep. There's another teal tomorrow? Wow, okay. The Gemara says in Erevin, an interesting comment, Hai alma kibehi lula damya. The Gemara says this world is like a festive gala celebration. So what does that mean? This world is like a festive celebration? Like we should just be partying all day? Of course, that's not what it means. So the Rishonim write, well, what it means is, anyone here have any siblings who ever got married? Did you watch as the wedding preparations were unfolding over the few months of the engagement? So what happens? You spend months and months and hours and sleepless nights figuring out what are the invitations going to look like and who are we inviting and which table are they going to sit at and, oh, we didn't hear a response from this person and what gowns is everyone going to wear and which colors are going to be, which makeup artists are we going to use and which symphony orchestra are we going to have? And so many things, sleepless nights and so much time. And then you get to the wedding. And how long does it last? The wedding starts at 6 o'clock. It's over at 11:30. If you have a day wedding on a Sunday, it starts at 4:30 and you schlep everybody to stay there till 11:30. How long is it going to last? It's over after a few hours. You invested so much of your time for something that's so fleeting, that's so ephemeral. So the Rishonim say, it's a reference to this world. Hay alma kebe lula damia. People sit and they plan and life is going to be this and I'm going to have so much money and I'm going to do that. By the time you're finished collecting all of your wonderful things, life is over. Take advantage. Make sure you take advantage of at least the time that you have celebrating that wedding. Enjoy life a little bit. Make sure to take advantage of the opportunities that life gives you. Don't let life pass you by. That's what the Rishonim say. One of the Talmidei al-Baal Shem Tov writes a totally different pshat, so beautiful, where he suggests, imagine you go to a wedding and you walk inside and it's a beautiful venue and you have such a gorgeous arrangement of flowers, such an elaborate band, and the best singer, and such a assortment of food and drinks, and everything one could ever want. You walk into the room where they're having the chuppah, all the guests are assembled, and this room looks majestic, and it's beautiful, and it's so amazingly uplifting to be there, together with hundreds of guests, and you're talking to everyone, and having the time of your life. Imagine, everyone's quiet under the chuppah, Chassan and Kala are there standing together. Masada Kedushin turns to the Chassan and he says, you know, now we're up to the Kedushin. It's time for you to take the ring and say Hareat Mekudeshesli. Whenever I'm Masada Kedushin, I always tell the boy, don't say it to me, you're not marrying me. Turn to the Kala and say Hareat Mekudeshesli. You, the Kala, are being married to me. Imagine the Masada Kedushin turns to the boy and says, it's time to be Mekadosh, your wife. And suddenly he says, well, I'm just not sure. I don't know. I don't know. I want to go ahead with this. And he starts hesitating and he withdraws and he just walks off the stage and runs out of the hall. All the guests are looking at each other. Nobody knows what to do. Suddenly, this amazing evening that was so inspiring and so uplifting became really awkward. A couple of years ago, I was speaking in West Hempstead, and I said over this pshat of the Baal Shem Tov. Rabbi Kellermer was there. Anybody here from West Hempstead? So Rabbi Kellermer, Olav HaShalom, really special tzaddik. He was there, and he came over after I finished, and he told me a story. He said, Shai, you stick around in the Rabbanus long enough, you'll see everything. He says, you're not going to believe what happened to me. He told me he was at a wedding. The Chassan and Kala were Bali Tshuva. And they had many friends from their college years who weren't Jewish, who came to the wedding. And at this wedding, one of the Italian friends, 6'6", had never seen so much alcohol in his life, and he was really enjoying it. Comes to the chuppah, nobody really was paying attention to what he was doing, but the Chassan and Kala walk down the aisle, and this guy is standing right in front of the chuppah. He's wobbling, he can't stand straight. Everybody noticed he was obviously drunk. And suddenly he collapses, right in front of everyone. Straight down on the floor. Somebody calls Hatzela. Hatzela comes, puts him on a stretcher. They start wheeling the guy out. They were going to work on him outside. They didn't want to disturb the whole wedding. It was already disturbed enough. They start wheeling him out. The Kala says, where are you taking him? They said, we're going to take him to the hospital. She says, I'm not going to let my friend go alone. She walks out and goes along with him. The Chassan says, I'm not going to let the Kala go leave the wedding herself. I'm going with her. And suddenly, the Chassan and Kala both left their wedding in the middle of the chuppah. Rabbi Kellermer said he was standing there, not knowing what to do. Ridiculous. And he said he took the mic, and he said that in the days of Chazal, they used to separate the Kiddushin and the Nisuin. A couple used to get engaged, then they would wait a couple of months, get all the arrangements together, then they would get married, they would move into the same house together. So there was a separation. So he says, you know what, we're going to split in the other direction. We're going to have the wedding meal now. We're all going to celebrate, have a great time. And then hopefully later tonight, when the Chasan and Kala decide to come back, we'll have a chuppah. And that's what they did. He said they showed up a few hours later. Most of the guests had left already. They had a minion who was there, waited around for the wedding. And that was that. Says the Baal Shem Tov, imagine you're at such a wedding. What would you feel? Can it get more awkward than that? A chassan is not willing to say Arayim Kudeshesli. We dated for so many months. We really know each other well. We love each other. We had an engagement party. We've been celebrating. We've been shopping together. We've been planning for this. Describing what the rest of our lives are going to look like. And now you walk away? With hundreds of guests waiting? With all of your families there? Everything's ready? You walk away? Says the Baal Shem Tov, Hay alma kebehi lula damya. This world is like a wedding. It's all wonderful, it's great. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put everything in the world for us to enjoy. You ever think, what was the first instruction HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Adam HaRishon? Anybody know? It's the first thing he told Adam HaRishon. What? Nope. Nope. So we have eat, don't eat. So the Meshech Chachma points out that people mistakenly think HaKadosh Baruch Hu first told Adam HaRishon don't eat from the Eitz Hadas. It's not true. The first thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu said was, Mikol Eitz Hagan Achol Tochel. Enjoy life. I gave you a beautiful world. I want you to take advantage of it. There's one caveat. Don't eat from the Eitz Hadas, but 99% of the world is here for you to enjoy. That's why I made it. And we're all meant to enjoy life and to experience life in such a beautiful way. Provided that at some point we turn around to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, Hareyat Mekudeshesli. Says the Baal Shem Tov, at some point we need to turn around and say, I commit myself to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I want to have a relationship with you. But imagine a person goes through all of life, celebrating and having a great time, and all the guests are together and everything's wonderful. And at no point do you turn around and say, Hareyat Mekudeshesli. Suddenly life became very awkward. And we really don't know why we're here. And that, says the Baal Shem Tov, is what the Gemara means. Hay alma kebehi lula damya. You know, we daven so many times a day for a geula. And I always find it interesting. Why are we davening for a geula? You know, anytime something terrible in the world happens, people's knee-jerk reaction is, oh, we need Mashiach. I'm curious, and what's going to happen when Mashiach comes? I'm not sure. I believe the Rambam says that the coming of Mashiach and Achris HaYamim is one of the things that we won't know until we get there. We don't know exactly what it's going to be like, what's going to happen. People think money's going to be falling from trees. Anyone here planning to go to medical school? Yeah? So I wonder. You plan to go to medical school, so how many years out is that for you?
Three.
Till you become a practicing doctor?
Probably like 10.
10 years, okay. So when somebody is diagnosed with cancer today, everybody's response is, oh, we need Mashiach, this is terrible. So that means they believe that when Mashiach comes, there's going to be no cancer anymore. Halavai, right? It would be amazing. Do you believe Mashiach's still not going to be here in 10 years?
I don't
know. So why are you going to med school? Who are you going to take care of? I asked this question to someone else today. This girl said to me, no, I'm going to take care of healthy people. I said, when was the last time a doctor took care of healthy people? I said, what kind of medicine do you plan to go into? She said, anesthesiology. I said, anesthesiologists usually treat people who are sick, who are having an operation. She says, no, I'm going to be doing facelifts. And I'm going to do, okay. So she's the only plastic surgeon who's going to be doing anesthesiology on healthy people. Wonderful. But everybody else, 99% of those who go to med school, assume there are going to be sick people in the world. What do you mean? So why do you say we look forward to Mashiach? Who are you going to take care of? So I don't know what the answer is. I'm not trying to discourage you. I don't know. Anyone going into finance may have the same question. If money's going to fall from the trees, you won't have to do anything. There's going to be no stock market and no investments. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. Writes the Dubna Magid, and with this we'll close. He says, think about a child who goes to a wedding for the very first time. Any of you have any younger siblings? Little kids in the family who went to a wedding? You watch that? So exciting for them. Scurrying around, looking at everything, turning everything over, putting their hands into everything. Just really excited. They don't know what's going on, but they're just excited. So this child walks in and he sees hundreds of people there, and it's really an exciting evening. He walks into the room and he sees hundreds of people sitting separately, men on this side, women on the other. He sees a big canopy up in the front with an aisle down the middle. He walks straight down the aisle, goes under the canopy. He sees there's a young man, a young woman standing together. He doesn't know what's happening. So he taps the young man on the shoulder and he says, "You know, everybody's here, but they all look very happy. I'm just curious, you look much happier than everybody else. Why are you so happy?" And the boy turns to him and he says, "Well, I'm the chassan. Of course I'm happier than everyone else." So the child turns back and he says, "I appreciate your answer, but I have no idea what that means. What does it mean that you're the chassan?" He says, "What do you mean? What does it mean? Look at me. I'm wearing the greatest, most expensive tuxedo I've ever had. I bought myself a new pair of shoes. Look at this food we have here. This is amazing. This is so exciting." "Okay." There's a young woman standing next to this young man. The young child turns to the woman and he says, "There are a lot of women in this room. They all look happy, but you look so much happier than everybody else. What's going on? What are you so happy about?" She says, "Well, I'm the Kala." "What does that mean, that you're the Kala?" She says, "Do you know, I got here at 6 o'clock this morning to start my makeup. We got my hair done. For the last 6 months, I've been worrying about my gown with the fittings. And I wanted everything to be just perfect. And the jewelry that I'm wearing tonight, I feel like a princess. This is amazing. I've never felt like this in my life. Of course I'm happy." Says the Dubna Magid, "How long do you think this marriage is going to last?" "Not long. If all they're focused on at this most exciting moment of their lives is the jewelry and the gown and the food that they're serving and the tuxedo that he's wearing and the new shoes that he has, you're missing what the essence of the moment is. The reason why you need to be excited is because you are now about to commit yourself to a relationship with the person who you love so much, who you're going to go through the journey of life together with, who you trust more than anybody else, who you appreciate more than anyone else in the world. That's why you need to be excited. While it's true that every wedding, the kala wears a gown, and maybe she gets her makeup done, and there's great food, and the chassan wears his tuxedo, or whatever it may be, all of those are just ancillary parts of what the celebration is. They enhance the feeling and the ambiance of the gathering that we have, but that's not the essence of what it is." Writes the Dubna Magid, "When you think about a geula and we daven for it so many times a day, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu going to stop making people sick after the geula comes? Maybe. Is money going to fall from the trees and we're not going to have to work anymore? There's going to be no shibud malchios? Maybe, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to look like. But that's not the essence of why we daven for a geula. We daven for a geula because of Sechazena Einenu B'Shuvcha L'Tzion B'Rachamim. Because the Navi says, Sos Hasiz B'Hashem. Because when I have the opportunity to have a geula, I'll be reunited with a sense of understanding of who HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, which is what we're lacking today. It's what we don't have. We feel so distant. We don't have an understanding. We don't live with the Ribono Shel Olam at every moment of our lives. We ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a geula, not because of all the other advantages that might come along with it, but because of the essence of what it is. And that is finally being given a glimpse and an appreciation of what living life together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in an intimate way can actually feel like. That's why we want a geula. Hay alma kebehi lula damya. This world is like a festive gala wedding celebration. And our job is to turn around at some point and say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hare at mekudeshesli. I commit myself to you. I want to have a connection with you. I want to forge a deep, meaningful relationship together with you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't know how to do that. But my mission and my goal throughout life is to make sure that I have opportunities where I can say Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Velokei Yaakov, VeElokei Mi. That I am going to try throughout the experiences of my life to figure out how to fashion a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is not connected to the one that he had with my parents, that has nothing to do with the one that he had with my grandparents. It's all following in the same Masorah, but it's something that's meaningful to me. It's something that I've spent time thinking about. It's something I've spent time trying to appreciate on my own. And it's something that I work every day to develop, to make more meaningful, and to get deeper involved with. So I wish all of you continued Hatzlacha. It's a pleasure to be here tonight. Enjoy the rest of your year, the rest of your Tiyulim, I guess in the short term.